Namaskar, Mihi Nui, and a very good morning to you, Auckland. It's 5 minutes past nine, and you're listening to 104.6 Planet FM and Keep Auckland Beautiful. Before we jump to today's interview, just want to remind you that starting in about 10 days, we've got the Eco West Festival. I'm always getting the North and the West festivals mixed up. And there are all kinds of activities happening all throughout the month of March. So I urge you to go have a look at their website and check out what's happening. Now, today's interview is actually an encore presentation with Rochelle Kahui McConnell from Ngāti Whātua, or who works for Ngāti Whātua, I should say. And I'm replaying this because I'm about to do another interview and find out what's happened since we spoke. Welcome to the show.
Kia ora, Rick.
You work for the Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei Trust, doing a restoration project, am I correct?
I manage the Ōkahu Catchment Ecological Restoration Plan, and it's based in Ōkahu Bay in Tamaki Makaurau. And for the last 5 years, we've identified Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei's ecological health indicators, you know, what they think is important, what their vision is. And we worked a lot on what was it like, what was it before the impact of, you know, the biggest city in Aotearoa. How long did it take you to gather your kai? What was that rate? What was the feel of the water? How was it connected to the land? So we brought along and we elicited a lot of that old knowledge from the Kui and Kaumātua so that we could give ourselves a vision for the future. And so some of those visions were, you know, a healthy bay has our whānau in it, so whānau who are conducting their cultural activities, their breathing and dancing and laughing and being with their children and teaching them, and they're eating the kaimoana that comes from the bay. That's something that we totally work towards. And,
that's really exciting.
From the tamariki, from the babies, you know, one of their visions was to have kūtai be able to go down and play with crabs and that sort of thing. But they also wanted something which is totally appropriate for them. They wanted a hydro slide. So, you know, just for us, there's all of these goals that are achievable. And are specific for that whānau because this is their bay.
But that's actually really exciting because so often you'll do a scientific, and I put that in inverted quotes, a scientific baseline, but it takes account of where we are today, completely ignoring how much we've lost even over the last generation. And I know from science circles, because I have a science background myself, that they call it baseline slippage, because as each new PhD or master's student comes along, they do a new baseline, and that becomes the baseline from which governments decide, we can give up another 20% of the shellfish. That's not a problem. Well, it is.
Yeah.
So that's really...
Well, you know, our baselines we identified, and we actually marry and had committed to marry Mātauranga, so our knowledge, or not my knowledge, but the knowledge of Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei, you know, the length of time that they've interacted and had their babies and buried their ancestors in this land. So all that Mātauranga, that knowledge, we always marry it with science, and that has enabled us to be able to speak in both worlds. I can stand talking to the taumata, to the kui and kaumātua, and say to them, you know, you spoke of this and you wanted this and you've identified this. But then I can take their intention and stand with stormwater and talk about heavy metal content in the sediment, you know, layers, the runoff from Tamaki Drive or the catchment base or the turbidity or, so you know, total solids. And I can speak in both worlds. So both of them, we're moving into a time where there's a recognition that both worlds can work together. And, in fact, they bolster each other. So it's a stronger message.
Right. So let's go back in time for a moment. What traditionally did your whānau pull from Ōkahu Bay just on a regular basis? What was the kai that was traditionally pulled from Ōkahu Bay as opposed to what's there today? But let's just go back in time.
Sure. Just to clarify, ko Ngāti Mani Pōtotaku Wīwi. So I actually am not Ngāti Whātuarake, but... And so it's always an honour and a privilege to work with Ngāti Whātua and bring their messages across.
Oh, very good.
And it's kind of different also to work for another iwi. But I have spent a long time, you know, up to 7 years now with the whānau. So I'm hoping that I've heard what they've said. And
give it a fair
hearing.
There's
a really nice, really nice message, you know, of... essentially, up until the 80s, there was this one little comment that was, you know, we couldn't see the beach for bums in the air, you know, for that many whānau that were gathering. Whole combinations of tuangi, kokol, pipi, kūtai, pūpū, flounder, kina. You know, kina were really, really abundant down in Ōkahu Bay, pawa. So pretty much everything that you would expect from an ecosystem, from a healthy ecosystem, was down in Ōkahu Bay.
Was down and available.
And it really didn't take very long for them to gather huge amounts of kai. There's, you know, my elder that I speak to all the time, who is the fisherman of Ngāti Whātuarake, it was his job to go out fishing, and it was he and his brother that would flush the piper into nets and then disperse that kai through the whānau. So up until the 80s, my understanding is that it was still pretty flourishing.
But so what happened in the 80s?
Development. Sorry, say that again?
So what happened in the 80s? Was it the catchment development that began to corrode the quality of Ōkahu Bay?
Yeah. So the Māori or the life essence started to be affected and decreased. If we look at the pipe itself that is underneath Tamaki Drive was the original sewer pipe that came out and was built in 1910, and that used to come out where Kelly Charlton's is now. So
that's right.
That brought whole levels of destruction to Ngāti Whātua, death and destruction to the mana of Ngāti Whātua. And then there's Tamaki Drive, so that 22,000 cars a day, twice a day, you know, all of the heavy metals and toxins that come off cars
the
and brake
lining
from the catchment.
Yeah, the brake linings sediment. And all the oil, yeah.
Yeah, so sediment, you know, down from all of the housings that were developed. And then we've got the landing that's the maintenance area from the landing and the marina, all the copper and zinc that comes off the boats. And then we've got moorings in the middle of the bay, and there's copper and zinc that comes off the antifoul from them.
Yes, and
so
I understand.
Hugely impacted.
Yeah, I understand that the Ōkahu Bay, and in terms of water flow in the harbour, it's not a trap, but it doesn't flush as often or as freely as other areas. It's and so toxins of various kinds can accumulate there. Am I right? Have I understood that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the mātauranga of the whānau was that the baseline of the bay started changing in the 80s. It used to be sandy, and now it's not. And if you have a look at Ōkahu Bay, you know, it's pretty much engineered within an inch of its life. It's got rock walls and Tamaki Drive and a marina and everything.
That's right.
All of the edges have been controlled. And so we did a hydraulic model on the bay, and essentially it just showed that what used to flush doesn't anymore. And the way that the longshore drift, the way that the current flows past the front of Ōkahu Bay actually catches on the marina, and the energy in the bay is really low. So what used to be flushed out, all of that silt and clay and all of the heavy metals that would have been flushed out if there wasn't so much engineering, just settles in the bay. And that's why there's no more haumoana, because they're filter feeders and they have to sit in the middle of a big sort of soup
of yucky stuff.
Sediment.
Yeah, and sediment. Mm. Right. Now, the restoration program, though, is restoring shellfish to the bay, is it not?
Yeah, well, that's one of the approaches. We start from the top of the catchment, and our Whenua Rangatira Koti Pukaki restoration program, that's been going for nearly 14 years now, and, you know, 190,000 plants we've planted, and the plan is to open up in daylight, so open up all the pipes that that used to be streams, opening them up to the day, increasing the filtration from those streams, increasing the habitat so that we have more fish spawning.
And the oxygen levels?
As much as we can from Tamaki Drive. But one of the very cool, and I think it's very cool because it's an active participant kind of process, and that is that we started our own mussel reef restoration program last August. We put down 1.5 ton of mussel, totally experimental. And we kind of, you know, in typical science form, we went in and we thought, oh, we'll put them here. And then to Maite Tamariki, the gentleman who I told you about, who was the, you know, 7-year-old boy who was sent out to go fishing for Ngāti Whātua, he kind of just nodded his head but didn't say anything, which for me was an indication of, okay, pull back and let's actually talk to the whānau who live in the bay. And he just sort of said, well, if you put them there, that's where all the fresh water comes out of Hobson Bay and there's a really strong current there. And, you know, he totally knew where to put everything. So we just went, okay, let's listen to the elders and went with where he said.
So the first batch did well. So the first bunch did well because they went in over a year and a half ago, right?
August. So
August last year.
Nearly a year ago.
Okay.
And we actually have a PhD student, a Ngāti Whātua PhD student, who's in there measuring them and monitoring them. And her PhD is around actually the uptake of heavy metals in the shell. So we actually want to know, because mussels can filter up to 350 litres of water a day, the idea is that if we put in what's called a bioremediator or a biofiltration, they will take out the heavy metals. They're obviously not fit for human consumption, but we want to know that. We want to be able to measure that. So our PhD student's in there, and she's sort of down in the water checking out how they're coping. And for the last 8 months, we've put in another ton about 3 months ago. And then on Wednesday of this week, we put in another ton. So, and our citizen science part of this, you know, the learning as we're going, our first lot we put in, the mussel had been sitting outside for a day and a half. And so they'd obviously opened up, let their water go, and then had closed back up again. And so when we put them in, a lot of them floated away. So a learning experience for us. And so on Wednesday, we soaked them for 20 minutes before we put them in, and they just all sunk. So, you know, when I sort of started by saying it's an experimental process, it's nice to be able to reflect on our practice and then change things up a little bit and see a different result.
Brilliant. So you've now got a couple of tons of shellfish in there with the express purpose of, well, to use the technical term, bioremediating in layman's terms, to pull some of the heavy metals and other nasties out of the water.
Aye. And it's being done in a couple of other places with the Revive Our Gulf program. But this one, I think, it's different because this one is actually being run by the hapū. You know, the first day that we went out, the Waka Arma crew took out the mussels. And
nice.
Yesterday, on Wednesday, you know, one of the old kaumātua, he brought his boat down and he and his mokopuna came out with us. So what we aim to do is increase that connection. You know, coming back to that, our whānau in the healthy bay has our whānau in it. What I try and do, and everything that we do, is build that capacity and the connection that Ngāti Whātua used to have with their bay, build it back up again.
Mm.
So it's really nice to be there with the old, knowledgeable, connected whānau. You know, it's and the other thing that we do is, you know, it's not all environmental. It's a lot of it is social capital. So building up the capacity for kaitiaki and for kaitiakitanga and guardianship. So all of the schools that are within the catchment, once again, coming back to that citizen science, you know, citizen science is basically just allowing citizens to take part in that process where they're researching and they're monitoring and they're analysing and they're holding on to that knowledge. So we build up, we've built up as many citizen science programs as we can with all of the schools. One school in particular runs our Kaimoana survey. We've done annual Kaimoana surveys for the last 7 years.
What does that involve? Give me a practical example. What does that involve for the students? What does a typical student have to do?
When we first started this Kaimoana survey, it was part of my undergrad research, and it was just me and six of my friends, and that was it, and no Ngāti Whātua. And what we found, what you do is you run a line out from the high tide out to the middle of the bay, and every 50 metres you stop and you drop down a metre square, and within that you just count what you find. And that gives you an abundance and a diversity and a spread of, you know, how many shellfish you have. And we have only been counting pipi and cockle. And so we've done that for the last 7 years, and that's given us a really good understanding of, we get seeding in the bay of cockle, but once they start to mature, they normally migrate into the body of the bay. And when they get to the body of the bay, that's where all that heavy sediment is, so they die because they're filter feeders. And when we talk about some feeding, you know, we kind of, our levels are around 300 to 400 cockle per survey. So when you think back to couldn't see the beach for bums in the air, it's nowhere near the abundance that it used to be. And so six, 7 years ago, the school goes down and they run that program themselves. They totally, every single child pretty much is a, one of my goals is to get as many marine biologists as I can. And so these students go down and they know how to run it. And in fact, last year they invited two other schools and they hosted two other schools. And so we had 120 students down in the bay.
Okay.
So that's just
Is there an opportunity for the general public to get involved in some, in one aspect, not necessarily that particular monitoring project, but any other citizen science opportunities?
With this one in particular, it's normally during the week, so it's school time. We do have Waikia as well. We've set up Waikia, and that's stream monitoring, so freshwater monitoring. We do that through the schools as well, but we're actually starting to identify that people actually are at work during the week. And so it's one of the things that we're looking at is starting to run these programs in the weekend so that we can involve as many of the community as possible. Because, you know, whether they are Ngāti Whātua Ōrākei or they are Ōrākei community, they live and breathe this area, so they also want to be part of it as well.
Of course.
I think, you know, a big invitation would go out to the community at large for our next planting day.
I was just going to say, Aranui is running
that. Restoration, sorry, Brett.
Yeah, what's the date of that? That's all right.
I'm sitting in front of my computer picking, bringing it up. So our next restoration planting day is on the 23rd of May, and it starts at 9:30 and it'll go through to 12:30. And whānau are invited to meet at Ōrākei Marae, which is 59B Kite Moana Street, Ōrākei. And we get in as many plants as we can within 3 hours, but it's actually not just a planting day. Whānau invite and greet and embrace those that come to put the korowai, put the cloak back onto Papatuanuku.
I've done a number of them.
It's a cultural day.
Yep, I've done a number of the planting days. That's why I wanted to make sure we got a plug in for it.
Yeah, I was just going to say I've planted next to you on multiple occasions. So there's the 23rd of May, and then the next one after that, if you can't make that one, is the 20th of June. That's our Matariki planting, and we've got hangi and Matariki planting, and at the same time, you know, we will be running hikoi, so walks across the whenua to connect whānau to the rest of the stuff that we're doing as well.
Very good. Now, I'm excited that that's come around again because it's Aranui who runs that particular program, isn't it? Have I got that right?
Erawini is one of our kaimahi, but it's Charlene Weapo. She was the
the
restoration manager for 13 years, and now she schedules all of the work. So she is the ecologist and ethnobotanist that I certainly revere for her practice. She's very, very knowledgeable.
Brilliant. That's exciting. No, I'm thrilled that's coming around again, and I will definitely be there.
Awesome.
Right. So what other projects have you got going down in your restoration project, which is not up on the Whenua, but down on the bay?
Yep. So a big thing that's happened is that there was a pipe that is on the eastern end of the bay that was piped in 1936. And we've worked for over 2.5 years now with Ngāti Whātua to identify what they'd like and if what they would like to happen. And we're also working with Stormwater from Auckland Council. So we sat down and we said, if we can increase the filtration and the habitat of the bay and therefore the Māori of the bay, what would that look like and what could we do? And so we are reinstating the tidal creek. So we're going to open up that whole tidal creek. And one of the design aspects was once again from our fisherman to Maiti Tamariki, and he just wanted as much inanga spawning as possible.
Okay.
Because he's a fisherman. So we thought, okay, fair enough. And, but then there were other indicators. You know, some of the whānau wanted to be able to practice whakawhanaungatanga. They wanted to take their mokopuna down to the bay, teach them about the past, and connect them to the bay. Sorry, Rick.
That's all right. Say hello to the dog. Our listeners will say hello to the dog.
So what they wanted to do was teach their their mokopuna about the past and who they are now and their place, and so that they can think to the future. And so when we were designing the creek, it was definitely make it safe for them to get in there and get dirty and play with the with whatever is in that stream. Don't put fences up. Make sure that the education and the kaitiakitanga is maximised as much as you can. So
has it been daylighted?
That's going to go in, and that's the design for that has been finalised. But what we are doing is we're waiting for water care and stormwater to separate all of the overflows,
right,
the stormwater drains of
right.
the catchment. So that'll take a couple of years.
Okay.
When they've done that, then we'll put the tidal creek in, because if we did it the other way around, we'd still end up with all of the stuff from the stormwater catchment in the stream, and we don't want that. So that's going to be in the next couple of years. And people sort of say to me, what can I see? At this point, not a lot, because the mussels are underwater and all of the proposals and the conversations and the negotiation have all been sort of over a desk so far. But in the next few years, you'll see a big difference.
Well, it is infrastructure, and it's, as you say, pipes have to be redirected and rerouted, and that takes time and money and effort. But it's really exciting to hear that it's going to be daylighted and restored.
Yeah. Just the fact that in such an easily accessible place as Tamaki Makaurau, you only have to drive for 9 minutes to be out of the city to actually see and feel restoration. So that's for us. It's a real point of pride for us to be able to say you can come and you can be in a place and practice kaitiakitanga so easily.
Excellent. Yes. I mean, that's why I come for the plantings in the winter.
Yeah.
Because as you say, you're practicing that right there in the city, for want of a better word, actually with a beautiful view of the CBD.
Yeah. And normally being thrown around a bit by the wind, because it's Ōrākei. It's an active system, shall we say.
Yes, it is. Well, it's wonderful to hear that all that's going on, and I suppose a lot of this has been unlocked because of the settlement in 2011, right? Which means that the management issues are sorted, and Ngāti Whātua can literally roll their sleeves up and do some great work.
Yeah, I mean, the 1991 Ōrākei Act, which is the treaty settlement outcome for Ngāti Whātua, that set up the co-management structure between Ngāti Whātua and Auckland Council on behalf of everybody from Tamaki Makaurau. But it's taken a while for that capacity, for Ngāti Whātua to be able to identify what it is they want in a restoration plan, let alone have that capacity to be able to do it, So for the first 10 years, it pretty much stayed status quo. And then what happened was that the Charmaine Weapo came along, Ngāti Mu Blair came along. They were both mad visionaries that said, let's just do it. So a wheelbarrow with a flat tire and a couple of knives and, you know, and 150 plants a day was where it was to start. And from there, you know, now we have 15 members on our staff on our Okahurako restoration crew. We have our own nursery that grows up to 50,000 eco-source plants every year. We've got multiple contracts around Tamaki Makaurau. And we're really, really proud about the fact that we only use hard labour to make a difference. We do not spray, we do not use pesticides or any sort of poisons. And we, because, you know, why would you want to poison Papatūānuku? Why would you take her back to bare ground when what we do is we actually convert Māori on site? So we take, for instance, privet and lots of tree species that are deemed weeds. We'll cut them down, make windrows out of them, so make piles of them. And, you know, that just creates this whole amazing biota because there's lots of bugs and bees and birds. And
it becomes a nursery.
Everything breaks down, creates soil, and that's how we do it, you know. So Ngāti Whātua now, they are seen as leaders in the field because they've had a long time to build that capacity up. But what I really love about working with Ngāti Whātua is that they appreciate that the mana is in the sharing of that knowledge, and so they're very, very happy to share any of their knowledge, invite anybody to come up and experience, you know, training. Charmaine runs a community coordinator workshop through Kaipataki Project, which is free. It's phenomenal. You know, you get to work with Charmaine and all of our Okahurako staff and learn how to run planting days, you know.
How would somebody get involved in that? Because we're running out of time, so we'll kind of wrap up with that. How would somebody find out? So it's Kaipataki Project via Kaipataki Project. Would you find out about that on their website?
Yes, you would, and it's a community coordinator program through the Kaipataki Project, and it's run by Charmaine Weapo. And what she does is she takes the participants through all of the sites that she works on, predominantly Ōrākei and Whenua Rangatira, and teaches them the tricks of the trade, you know, because sometimes you can be an ecologist who doesn't really get on with the community, or you could be vice versa. So she takes your skills and she builds up the ones that you need
and matches
normally gets around 11 or 12 people a year that come through that are amazing.
That's brilliant. Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time this morning.
No problem. Thank you so much for your opportunity.
Thank you for coming in and sharing your story and, of course, the story of what Ngāti Whātua is doing to restore this beautiful place.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Rick.
All right. Kia ora. Thanks.
Nga mihi nui. Kia ora. Baby, come again.
Listening. If you've missed anything in today's program, don't forget, you can listen again online at any time. planetaudio.org